Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 60 of the AI Comic Pod. It's the one that all five of you have been waiting for. It's our Infinity War special. This year, this decade, I don't know, I reckon it's maybe lifetime. Of all time if it goes that way. Film, you know, huge release. What are we currently stacked at, Stu, on the box office?
It's currently the 14th highest grossing film of all time with $1.244 billion in a fortnight.
Which
is that mental.
I mean, when they talked about the opening and how it would get on and after Black Panther's ridiculous, you know, run at the box office, I don't think anyone predicted it would knock those kind of figures and beat The Force Awakens on that opening weekend. It's just astonishing. I mean,
that was the big one, and it didn't just beat The Force Awakens, it absolutely killed that. And what was it? Was it 480 million or something?
Yeah, I think it was at least that. The other guest I would like to introduce, if we're going to do this professionally and properly.
Why start now?
I know exactly. Is a very good friend of ours. A man who has appeared,
a casual acquaintance.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm about to speak with a Thanos, really.
But way less.
He's finally got now. His space toilet to come on this podcast. It is the one and only Marco Lopez. How are you, sir?
Ooh, a little bit of cheek after a little bit of while, hey? Well done. Hello, boys.
He's learning off me.
Yeah, it's
not
it's,
as much,
it's
though,
that
he didn't
bad
call
influence.
You.
No, I haven't sworn yet.
Neither have I.
No, there's going to be plenty of spoilers, and there's going to be plenty of swearing, and there's going to be a lot of general chat about how incredible that film is, and lots of things we're going to do. We're not going to do a quiz because there's too much to talk about and, you know, there's too much to cover. We are going to maybe cover this over two parts. We're going to review the film in full. We're going to talk about some of the kind of intricate details. We are going to touch on comic spoilers as well. And then we're going to maybe do a part two where we look ahead to kind of future Marvel releases and part two of this incredible saga. And I think one thing I do want to know actually before we start is that I think people need to sometimes take a step back and realize this is two parts. I think sometimes when people, and I remember watching Lord of the Rings and I've rewatched it recently, which is why this comes to mind, but when I was quite young or a little bit younger, watching Lord of the Rings, not realizing it was a three-parter, and at the end of the first film going, what the fuck has just happened? Because it ended. I thought it was going to go on and on and on for what felt like days, and it didn't, and I had to wait a whole year. And so we've got that same kind of situation where everyone is trying to read as much comic material. They're trying to rewatch the film. They're rewatching MCU stuff. They're trying to get every kind of Easter egg and hint and spoiler ahead of the next film. But I think we know that Marvel aren't going to give anything away, including the title of the next film already, which is quite remarkable in a such a heavily marketed kind of film area that we reside in now. So yeah, it's something that needs to be remembered, that this is only part one. And when we come back in the future and watch these films for future generations, everyone will be watching them in two parts. They won't just be watching it as a single entity. And I'm hoping there's going to be extended releases as well, because there's a few complaints about this film, not many, and I think most of them are really considerably unfounded, but the ones that are about people missing or characters missing or not enough screen time. But for me,
most of the extras I've seen have been poxy. I mean, me and my mate Tom, who I cinema with, we were talking about them last night, and some of the things that we've heard of, oh, there's too much Thanos, and where was such and such a body? It was barely an Avengers film, and honestly, they're all absolute bollocks.
The best thing about this film is it's a film centered around a villain. I think that the best thing around it is the bravest thing and the boldest thing that they've done is made it all about Thanos, you know? And we will talk about that. I mean, Stu, you watched it in LA, which is pretty cool, opening night in the States.
It was cool as fuck. It really was.
What was your initial reaction? I mean, I know you sent me a message at what was about 3 a.m. And yeah, I felt that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got home at about midnight and I was with Michelle and our auntie. And I said to her, the one thing I didn't want to do was get talking to people. And then I got messages off Tom and Ian on Facebook, and then you replied to me on WhatsApp. And I was like, oh, shit, it's 6 o'clock. Everyone's waking up for work. So then I didn't go to bed for another hour or so.
Yeah, exactly.
But watching it in the States, it was the whole experience of the whooping and the hollering and the way every sort of little chapter was introduced as its own little thing. There was always like a round of applause before it. And at first it was quite annoying, but then you know what? I actually loved it. And last night when I watched it again, I was kind of missing the fact that, like, the first time you see Peter on the bus and his spider sense is kicking off, everyone was like, woo, Peter Parker, woo! And last night it was like, oh, no one's cheering for Peter. So I actually kind of liked the American.
I was cheering for Ned. Everyone absolutely adores Ned.
We're all going to die!
There's a fucking spaceship. We're all gonna die.
It was strange, though.
Cinema experience like in South Africa, actually? Because I've never asked this question. Is it big cinema? Do you go to? Is there an IMAX? There will be in Joburg, but
no, there is an IMAX, and I went to give it some support.
Nice.
On opening weekend, and then psychotically went the very next day again. So it was interesting because you obviously hear a lot about some of the reactions from people, and waiting outside for the previous showing to come out.
Yeah.
And you just see all these people walk out, and they're just subdued. Like, this very sort of, like, someone's been, not like a guttural depression like after Logan, just like subdued, like someone hits you in the stomach and you can't talk. But
it's a bit of a sucker punch, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously then, you know, so sort of I had that expectation thinking, okay, people are obviously, something quite big happens in this film. And then you watch it and then it does. I have to say that my favorite reaction in the theater is because some people were expecting it. You could just tell. And some people were just sort of not ready for it. But that moment when Thanos stabs Iron Man in the theater was just quite something to behold. And one of the things I enjoyed about going the second night is watching. I actually quickly stopped, looked around, and just, wow. I mean, you could have heard a pin drop in the theater, which is quite something considering, you know, you're in a movie. So, it was a great experience. I don't think we have IMAX 2D, which is what you did.
Yeah, I was quite.
IMAX 3D was pretty cool.
Yeah, opening night, I went straight after work on the Thursday and just saw it in 2D, not in IMAX. And it was good, but I think the big thing about IMAX isn't just the screen, it's the sound. I mean, the sound is absolutely enormous in this film. It's such a pivotal part of this film because the score is sensational.
The score is so good, especially the way it harks back to that original Avengers sort of jingle that they use.
They have that Avengers moment, and it comes a few times, and that really gets you. I think we said that even when we were watching the trailer, you know, when it just kicks in.
They used it in a few different ways, because when they're trying to build the suspense now, they lower the tone, don't they? And they slow it down, and it becomes really really emotive, but then you've got the upbeat version, which is meant to be like, oh, okay. Now we're on the
Yeah, up. Exactly. Yeah. But I think the sound is such an important thing. And I think when you're in a fully packed cinema, and the both times I went, so I went on the Thursday and the Sunday, it was full. And literally there wasn't a seat spare. People almost fighting over seats. I've never really seen anything like that before. Not to that extent, you know, even the cheap seats, the ones at the front are gone. I went to kind of obviously see it opening night because it's a huge thing for me and our podcast and everything we do, but also to vet it a little bit because I took my little boy to the IMAX on the Sunday. And I was just fearing that Cap or Iron Man had died in the film, which, spoiler alert, they haven't. But there was that moment with Iron Man where I literally clutched his arm because I was fearing.
I thought Tony was dead at that. Really thought he was gone, and first I was like, shit. That was one of the moments, like you were saying before, in terms of reactions.
Yeah.
Obviously, bear in mind, Americans are quite melodramatic, but everyone in the room went, and it was a genuine,
well, it was
like,
that
you could,
moment.
You could feel the air get sucked out the room, and it was so tense.
Because you could kind of sense, you know, you could sense the Gamora one, because I think
got
if you know...
feeling, didn't you, when he said, like, there's a price to pay, I sort of started going,
Well, I didn't know that, the Soul Stone for me, I didn't know it was going to relate to that. I didn't know it was a sacrifice, you know, and I think that was a big factor in it. But I think you thought if there was anyone that was going to perish that means anything to Thanos, it's her.
It
you
had
know,
to be her.
She's the only one. Nebula is what he calls spare parts at one stage, which is so brutal.
He basically hates her.
Yes, he does.
But you can see why, if you think back to Guardians 2, she was the loser, wasn't she? The reason why she's got so many modifications is because she constantly lost to Gamora, and every time she lost, she got another mod.
He used Nebula as almost a plaything for Gamora.
She was a bait, bait dog, really.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you could see that. But I think the emotion that you got, and this is, we're jumping all over the place, but we will get into a little bit of structure. But when the Guardians first meet Thanos on Nowhere,
yeah.
I remembered something, Jesus. On Nowhere, and they get he's got the Reality Stone already. And she stabs him and she's crying, you know, and that relationship, you do get that sense quite early that it's much more complicated than just hatred, because it can't just be that. You know, if someone as a child is taken away, it's that kind of abductor, captee.
It's like
you
the
know,
Stockholm
kind of,
syndrome, isn't Stockholm it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And there is that element there, and you get that sense quite early that this is a big part of the story we're going to see unfold over the next, you know, 2.5 hours. And it was pretty pivotal, and it happened actually quite early, to be fair. It felt like in the film when, you know, Gamora must have been an hour and a half in, when that kind of moment happened, and it was a shock. But I don't think, I think the Iron Man moment was the bit everyone was fearing and waiting for. And ultimately, you know, he's living just to fight another day, really. So,
why don't we try and get some structure into it? If we go right back to the beginning, I was very surprised how quickly we saw Thanos. It was literally 90 seconds into the film before
they weren't pissing about. Yeah, they weren't pissing about.
Which was good to see.
Yeah, I mean, we'd kind of known that he was coming quick. I thought we'd kind of predicted that in the sense that, you know, at the end of Ragnarok, we know his ship is upon, you know, upon Thor's vessel, and they're leaving Asgard to try and find safe passage to Earth or wherever in the end. So I think I thought that would come early, but I didn't think we'd get, I thought we might have the Black Order. I didn't think we'd get that full.
That's what I thought. I thought we'd see them, but not him straight away. They'd allude to it. And I was trying to sort of keep an eye on it last night, and it was about 90 seconds in before, because he was skirting around it, weren't they? You could hear his voice in the background, and you've got Loki, and then all of a sudden the camera pans, and you've just got this huge imposing shadow by the window.
I think we knew we'd get stones quite quickly. Well, he had been hinted at. Exactly.
And I like the fact, and this is something that I've seen criticised, I like the fact that they didn't drill down into, you didn't see what happened on Xandar with him decimating the Nova Corps. You didn't see what happened on Nowhere with the Collector.
I don't think you needed to.
Agreed.
I don't think you needed to.
It also would have been a 3.5 hour film.
Well, exactly.
It doesn't mean that there's not any, like, there's still some fluff in the film that you could remove, though. So they do make it work, right? So I'll say this because I mean I'll make a couple of criticisms on this pod, which will luckily make me then popular one, and then you can go back to your hashtag again. But look, like, for example, I love Peter Dinklage. I really do. I'm a massive Game of Thrones fan now. But I'd happily trade all of those sequences in Nidavellir for more detail on Cap and Bucky. I really would. For example. I think out of all the stuff you were talking about in terms of, you know, the pacing and how full this film was, and even getting to Thanos right at the beginning, like, that worked, but there is some stuff that you could have taken out.
Yeah, I get that, and I'm not going to do the excellent Chris Hewitt impression of the handle joke about his English accent. If anyone's listened to the Empire podcast, they do a 2-hour, 40-minute Infinity War special, which is quite something. And they take the piss out of his accent. I don't think Chris is a Game of Thrones watcher as such, and I'm quite used to Peter Dinklage in that accent and that role to an extent. I thought he was good, actually. I thought it was quite fun. I thought it was quite a play on characters as well, with him being a giant dwarf.
Well, that was it. He was a giant dwarf, wasn't he? I thought that was brilliant. Because we didn't know.
Don't get me wrong.
We didn't know what he was meant to be.
Yeah.
I think the thing with it, Marco, I think it's almost a Thor film, really, as much as anything else. I think that, you know, with Civil War, which obviously is a Captain America film, but this is an almost direct follow-on from that rather than Age of Ultron. This feels like that was an Iron Man and Tony film, and, you know, that's the same person. That was an Iron Man and Cat film. And we've had a lot of them. And you don't need to preach to me and Stu about more Captain America, because we are his
team
biggest
Cap
fans.
Forever.
Yeah, Team Cap forever. But I think it kind of went down that road of Thor being the man, you know, and I think that followed on so well from Ragnarok, and I did love his lead in the role, because ultimately he's the strongest Avenger so far. And that's quite crucial. You know, it's amazing how quickly and swiftly Hulk got put in his box, really, you know, and got swept aside, because it was a nice moment when Loki said, "We have a Hulk," because it meant that Loki had finally turned a corner, it felt like, and he was still then playing tricks and games. And a lot of complaints again have gone towards Loki not being as pivotal in the film or in the films.
But it's only half time, isn't it?
Do we think he's dead? Because he's the one that might have tricked again, but I just think they played that card a few too many times.
If anyone's going to have escaped it, you'd think it'd be him. I watched, as you can imagine, I came back from honeymoon and I had loads of Emergency Awesome videos and Nerdist and Variant Comics and stuff. And the number of people that have picked up on the language that Loki was using when he's saying, like, the sun hasn't set, or the sun will rise again on us, brother. And there was 4 or 5 language hints that really do point to Loki not being dead. The only reason
even Thor had a moment with Rocket where he mentioned that, I think he's dead, but yeah. It's Loki after all, kind of thing, you know, so it's, yeah.
But we've said privately, some of these deaths have to stick. The one I think has to more than anything is Gamora. I don't think Gamora can come back.
I think it sets up Guardians really well, actually, because Guardians is obviously very playful and happy, and that's their but we need to see a different side of it to an extent. You know, it'd be hard to see a different side of Peter Quill, but I think maybe we're going to need to, because
I don't think Quill's on my shit list right now at the minute, because let's be honest, if he wasn't such an emotional dick, if he'd waited 5 more seconds to punch Thanos in the head, they would have had the gauntlet off and it would have been game over.
But then you would never see Quill. But then you would never see Quill.
But then I wouldn't have been crying so much, Marco. I was pretty much, what's the word when you get like just locked in place? Oh, not cathartic. Catatonic, that was it.
Catatonic.
I was in a complete catatonic state at the end of it, like, what?
Look, I'll say this for Loki, just to quickly finish on that point, is I actually do hope he's dead for one simple reason. I'm a big fan of seeing characters having a finite beginning, journey, and end. And I think, you know, if you look at Thor Ragnarok, it gave us enough of a bookend to him and Thor resolving the relationship as brothers in a very specific way. It is a quick death, I get it. But the thing is, like,
we've had a lot of that before. We had his redemption arc in a film that's just been released in October. Do you know what I mean? Exactly. And that's my big issue with anyone that says, oh, this person didn't get enough time. And that's not you, Marco, because I get the Cap thing. Cap is a lead character and he didn't really have anything to play with. And then other people are saying, well, Wakanda, because Black Panther did so well. But maybe they didn't expect Black Panther to do so well. Do you know what I mean? They didn't expect
expected Black Panther to have been as big as it was.
Exactly. And they wouldn't have expected Valkyrie and Korg to be that popular, because Ragnarok was a left field choice. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was something that might have made half a billion worldwide and done really well, you know, kind of in a kind of niche way, but it made so much more than that, and it's such a popular and loved film because it was so individual and unique.
That's fair.
Well, just on that subject, have you seen the official line now about where those people were?
Well, there was a split in the ship, is the rumor thing. So it's the classic kind of Thanos
thing. No, they'd evacuated.
Okay. Fifty percent had evacuated on a different ship.
Because if they were already dead, Thor has no powers, because as we found out, his power comes from Asgard, and Asgard is a people, not a place. So if they were all dead, he would have absolutely zero powers, and he would have snuffed.
Yeah, and they do need a bit of an out. Obviously, Heimdall, who'd been underplayed and underused, but he did well in Ragnarok in terms of they gave Idris Elba a little bit more to work with. But he had a small kind of heroic act at the end. And Loki went out the way that I was kind of proud of, that they did that. He showed...
It was a good death.
It was a good death, you know.
Because even at the end, he was being Loki, wasn't he? He was still conniving and scheming
and
up to his
mischief. Man, that is what he is.
It's the mischief.
Yeah, that's what he is.
You just got to hope that him being... Because I had a good look at Thor the Dark World recently in preparation for this film, and it was kind of like trying to pay attention when he gets stabbed, if he's in direct contact with that big dude. I can't remember his name. And, like, I don't know. I'm just thinking, if Loki is getting strangled, that's pretty definitive. But because obviously...
Yeah, I think so.
Because all the theories, I'm sure you've seen them. Loki went off screen. He came all smiling. I kind of hope that isn't... You know, it needs to be definitive.
I hope they're not trying to be too clever for their own good a little bit, because look, we know how many characters are in there. I mean, the film is so packed with such amazing relationships with new characters and interplays and things that you can't just expect to keep everyone around. You know, like, I think the things we said that got a problem with your kind of long-standing TV show, it's not Game of Thrones, which happily kills off people left, right, and centre, which I think keeps it really interesting and fresh. But Walking Dead, which is something that has really, really gone off the ball, and we all know that, is because they just got too favourable towards characters.
Well,
and they just didn't...
The Glenn thing fucked so many people off. I know so many people that stopped watching because they were like, well, what's the point? If you can fall off a bin into 1,000 walkers and somehow live... You've kind of lost the whole point of, like, the
finality of life. Only to kill him off 4 episodes later or whatever, you know? It's literally, you've got to sometimes make these choices. And I think the things the Russo brothers did so well in this film is that it was brave. And I think the bravest thing they did was for centering a film around an almost entirely new character. Because, you know, we haven't had any of Thanos. We've had discussions, like, little points, in Guardians 1 and various others, but nothing to say that he's this kind of threat and he's going to be this powerful.
I also think it was brave the fact that
his arc, it's all his film, really.
They did bill it, didn't they? They said that it was basically a heist film for Thanos.
Yeah, they did, but we didn't think that. I think most people thought it would be a heist, but centered around the Avengers, you know, with Thanos being a threat, but only in between the Avengers storylines. If you do, you know what I mean? It felt more. It's a Thanos-driven film. He's the main plot point. His arc is the main thing, and they've done something really brave that they've actually almost completed his journey in one of the two films.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because, and we will come to that, but honestly, they did the full journey. I didn't think. Or I thought maybe they might have the click of the fingers right at the end, like we said at the post kind of credits, or even literally at the end of the film when we don't see what's going to happen.
But that's what I expected. I thought it would be click.
He got all the stones, you know?
I thought it would be click and then black screen and we'd have to wait until the next one. I also thought
they could have easily got three or four stones and then two in the next film, you know?
It was also brave that the lead Avenger in this was Thor. It was brave of them to step away from Cap and Iron Man. And say, right, we're going, because after Thanos, nobody had more screen time than Thor. He was huge.
Yeah, and completely right to be as well, because I think, and you know, this is a very kind of typical film thing of me to say, but I think Hemsworth has stepped up to being probably the best actor in it, which I know people will maybe question me about that, but the guys.
I think that's fair comment.
I think the guy's range is just insane because he does those scenes where he's literally delivering an extremely serious emotional line and then 10 seconds later, he's laughing it off like it didn't happen. And he's got really clever, quick timing. His humor is something and it's underrated and we discussed that at length in Ragnarok because he's so good in that.
But he's come on so much. That's something backed up by Tom Hiddleston, and I was listening to an interview with the Empire as well. I mean, Tom also mentions that Chris has got this range of ability to switch from a very serious piece of dialogue to just sort of this effortless comic timing. And you're right, that sort of effortless segue does serve him really well. I just wanted
it
to
just suits him really well. Yeah, suits the character and his development, which has been almost astonishing because we mentioned that with the films that the first two films aren't particularly strong Thor films.
And he's not especially strong in them. He's at times.
No, because he's a kind of fledgling actor that was picked on his appearance as much as anything else, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, and Downey Jr.'s the charisma. And obviously Mark Ruffalo, I adore and think he's a great actor. And they have given Ruffalo more time than just the Hulk, because the Hulk was quite prominent in Ragnarok, you know? They've given him time as him, not in just a mocap.
See, I've seen that as a criticism as well, the fact that there was more Banner than Hulk, but to me, that was a huge strength. They actually allowed a brilliant actor in Mark Ruffalo chance to act as himself.
Yeah, because
it also makes sense for the character. Because
it does.
Think about the arc, right? Because if you understand it from Age of Ultron into Ragnarok, okay? He's gone from Bruce trying to run away to this green machine having full juvenile reign, right?
At the end of Ragnarok, he was on Sakaar for 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. So he's not as much as like a weapon of mass destruction as a hormonal teenager, right? But so when he comes out to fight Thanos at the beginning, it's not just the fact that he's embarrassed, but it's even that reference of like, we've got a Hulk and Hulk come out and Hulk, I think he's tired of being this muscle on demand, which is actually very interesting as a concept in terms of like, it's a very interesting thing to say, oh crap, here's the biggest threat Earth has ever had. And now this guy chooses not to come out. It's very interesting.
And it's something that they did
well.
They did that in Ragnarok, didn't they? They had that arc in Ragnarok where both Hulk and Banner say to Thor, oh, well, you only want me when there's fighting and stuff like that. They're like, you don't care about me. Hulk thinks that they prefer Banner because he's smart. Banner thinks they prefer Hulk because he's strong. So, as Marco said, it completely made sense. And now they've got that
he's
really
good
dynamic.
He's always the last choice, isn't he? He's always the guy that comes to save the day because he's the strongest at the end of the fight. Do you know what I mean?
He's always...
Yeah, exactly. He is, until Shuri rocks along. But
and just schools him. Why didn't you do it this way? Because we...
Can I just quickly circle back to something? Yeah. You guys are talking about the ending. I think one of the key things, right, the reason it shouldn't have ended on the snap and needed to end the way it did is because the snap's only meaningful to people who've read the comics.
I agree.
You have to, like, for me, that's not to criticize The Walking Dead again with the same stick, but like, that's a cliffhanger. You let the bad guy win at the end. And then you see everyone's like, what the hell? And then everyone walks out the theater. What the hell? That's a cliffhanger. That's how you do it.
And the look on Cap's face as well. I didn't spot that first time round. Cap was just gobsmacked. He knew they lost. They completely lost.
It's all, you know, they realize they've lost and they all act that exceptionally well because they realize the stakes are so much higher than maybe they'd first anticipated, you know, because they don't all know that he's going to just wipe out half the universe, really. They don't expect it to happen. Do you know what I mean? They don't anticipate that we'll lose because they're not used to losing. Do you know what I mean? They've always won.
I don't think any of them really believed that he could do it. I think the only one that probably did was probably Gamora. Maybe Gamora and Nebula.
Strange. Yeah.
I was going to give Marco a little pop quiz before. How many different futures did Doctor Strange see?
14,605,000.
Bastard.
Yes. I thought it was 14,603,000, and I couldn't find it on the internet for love nor money because I was saving that one for some point when we talk about it later.
That's another one of the things that's been pulled apart is, oh, well, why did Doctor Strange give over the Time Stone? And nobody seems to have put together. He saw 14,605,000 things.
Yeah.
He knows that the only way they win is to let him win the battle, but then he knows that they win the war, but first they've got to do this.
Well, let's talk. So we got through Loki's, scene where obviously Thanos has got two stones and Hulk comes crashing down to Earth. And then we get a quick straight into the Sanctum. And then...
with Wong.
Oh, I love Wong. The interplay at the beginning between Iron Man, between Tony and Doctor Strange is marvellous because there is no love lost between them. They're both
even though they don't
quite
know each
egotistical.
Other,
yeah, exactly. But everyone knows Iron Man. Everyone knows Tony Stark because he's that celebrity. Everyone knows of his ego. They know of his lifestyle. They know of his, you know, personality. So Doctor Strange feels like he's got him read before they've even met. Do you know what I mean? And obviously he's a highly intellectual
guy. But they're
cut
from the same cloth, aren't they? Because that was Stephen Strange's problem.
Man.
He's an arsehole as well.
They're both Sherlock. So in the next film, if Martin Freeman doesn't say to both of them, no shit, Sherlock, I'm going to write an email.
No, surely the more subtle one would be him saying something like, well, it's elementary, isn't it? That would be a great little...
Yeah.
Because that's one of those things that would go over so many people's heads.
What was the doctor line that he said to Doctor Strange? I can't remember what it was. A term you use for doctors, isn't it? I can't remember what it was. I'm going to have to find it. I thought their relationship early doors was really quite interesting, actually, because those two were as pivotal to the story in terms of the interaction with Thanos and setting up towards the next film as anyone in this, really. And I thought that initial fight scene with them and some of the interplay and our first look at, well, not first look, but our first look at the Black Order in action, really, or two of them, was really, really cool. I thought that opening fight scene was ace. And
it got better when Spider-Man turns up. Definitely got better
Everything
when he's like, hi, Mr. Stark.
Everything gets better with Spider-Man. Tom
this
Holland
is true.
Has nailed that role. Like, I can't even express how good he is in that role. But that fight scene, obviously, that gives us a quick hint of what's going to happen. They are after the Mind Stone, and we see the power, which doesn't last that long from Ebony Maw because he isn't a pivotal character. I think we just discover quite quickly that the Black Order are there as a kind of side note. They are
the red shirts, aren't they?
Thanos can't be everywhere. Do you know what I mean?
They're the red shirts from Star Trek.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think Ebony Maw is the one that stand out for me. And I really liked him. I thought his CG was impeccable. I thought his powers were really cool. And I thought his voice was perfect. He had a really eerie kind of take on the role.
He was a proper sycophant as well, wasn't he? He's definitely drunk the Kool-Aid with the way he's going on about it, whereas the rest of them seem more like mercenaries. He really looked like he was actually a little bit in love with Thanos. But his
especially because we didn't have. Is it Mephisto? Is the normal sidekick to Thanos in Infinity Gauntlet?
Yes and no. Mephisto in the comic book is a bit of a weird character because, like, throughout that story, you kind of feel like he's actually trying. He's doing a bit of a Loki and scheming for his own purposes, but ultimately is like sort of right hand man advising Thanos on how to court death, which is probably the only part of that story that I don't like, actually. Here's a question for you, if I may. I'm breaking host protocol here, but
go.
Do you like the fact that this wasn't about him trying to impress Death, but actually was... Because this whole righteous angle where he believes he's doing something for the greater good, I actually thought it was a very interesting way to bring in... You know why he's even doing this?
It makes him much more relevant.
I prefer Death's genuine threat over the Lady
Death is a character in the comics. She is a love interest of Thanos, which no one would have understood.
Even though she barely even knows that he's born. She's got no interest in him at all. He's basically a lovesick puppy.
He's a lovesick puppy who tries his best to impress her, and he's a snivelling little whiny fucker, to be honest.
He is. He's a bit of a whiny bitch, isn't he? And I think that's one of the reasons why it works that they changed him, because if they build him up as Thanos the Mad Titan and blah, 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 and then it turns out he's doing this to impress some bird, he kind of comes off looking a bit stupid.
But that's how it felt. The comic, I mean.
Yeah.
It felt like that, right?
I've still not read it, but I've read the synopsis of it, so I know everything that happens in and around it. And it does weaken Thanos. And like you've said, I think his air of superiority of, you know, the hardest decisions take the greatest resolve or whatever it is he says. This sounds a lot better. This makes him sound more like a madman than, oh, but if I kill everyone, she'll notice me and she'll love me.
Which she didn't anyway. But I agree with you, because I think that the whole dynamic now suddenly is you got this guy who's actually really powerful and stupidly so. And the fact that he is able to wield the gauntlet and is able to pull this stuff off almost makes it even more like a crazy twist on the whole. Because that's the thing. I think – I can't remember where I heard it, but it's just that whole concept of one of the most dangerous things is a righteous man who believes that he's sort of doing the right thing. Now, this isn't a man, but – you know what I mean?
No,
it's a very,
yeah.
It's a wonderful
no,
way.
It is. And actually, he makes him more, I don't know, it gives him an element of humanity, even though his ultimate genocidal maniac syndrome does kick in for most people. But
it's like Killmonger, isn't it? You can see the logic and the rationale behind what he's doing, because he talks about Gamora's planet. Since
screwed,
he wiped out
know,
half the planet. All they've known is prosperity. They've been better off, you know, if you exclude the genocide. So you can see the sort of twisted logic behind what he's doing and why
you
would
believe.
It's a
classic villain, you know, it's a classic villain take. I mean, not done quite on this measure of wiping out half the whole universe, but a lot of people have always talked about, you know, when you get those films where it's people get sick and it's to kill out, you know, a lot of zombie films go down those kind of traits, and lots of things I've seen in the past have done that. It's not new territory, but it's done in a really kind of innovative way with a villain that you...
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Kind of just as much intrigued about as anything else, because he's a fascinating character.
He is. And the CG going back was a absolutely bit, brilliant.
If we're on Thanos, let's do it properly. The CG is as good motion capture as anything I've ever seen. With Lord of the Rings for its time, because Lord of the Rings is a little bit dated with Andy Serkis as Gollum now, but it was exceptional at the time. And then the Planet of the Apes films, which are again Andy Serkis, but just, you know,
because Andy Serkis is stunning, the king really. Of mocap.
He is the king. He's a wonderful, wonderful actor, actually, and I'm glad he had his moment in the MCU, and he was great in that role. But Josh Brolin as Thanos and that voice and that menacing kind of appearance, and you can feel his, because I've watched a lot of Josh Brolin. He's a really interesting actor. He's great in you know, these really kind of dark, edgy No Country for Old Men films like that. He's so good in that, and we're going to get him as Cable, which would be really interesting. It's a slightly different role, but in terms of as an actor, I know his expressions, and I know the way he delivers them, and Thanos delivers them that way, and the voice is so menacing, and everything he says is just so purposeful, and you believe it, and it's hard to, you know, when we first saw even the first trailer of this, and we thought, you know, I'm a bit worried about the CG, and I'm not going to try and do this too much, and I haven't done it yet, but you look at Justice League, right? You look at Justice League and you look at the villain, and I've forgotten his name because it was so bad. Go on, hit me, Stu, with his name.
Steppenwolf. Yeah.
Steppenwolf. You look at Steppenwolf that looked like it was drawn, I don't know, by somebody who was blind. I'm sorry, but it's so bad, and it's so little attention to detail and so little kind of fear inducing in there. And then you look at Thanos, even with his scrotum chin, that real emotion you've got from him, and those tears are genuine, and it's just so well done. And it blew me away, actually. I legitimately found it amazing that they'd managed to create a CG character with that much
emotion.
You know, emotion. Yeah, exactly. As much as anything else, emotion, and believable emotion.
The scene when they're on Vormir, the bit where he turns around, you know, Gamora does her little speech and she's gloating, and then he turns and looks to her, and the look on his face was really like, oh God, he really does love her.
Yeah.
Which it to convey that level of emotion through mocap.
He didn't have to speak a lot. It was a lot through his
emotions.
It was
more powerful that he didn't.
Yeah.
If he'd had to speak, it would have been a bit like, well, yeah, but you kind of said it now. And it's even better because Red Skull, side note, fucking brilliant cameo. And I genuinely went, oh my God, it's Red Skull.
That was very cool.
Yeah, so I looked to my right, to my mate, and I went, it's fucking Red Skull. I was like, yeah, that was very nice. Cool.
The fact that even he jumps in and he goes, which he says, tears, and he goes, they're not for him. And then the penny drops with her. And I think the penny dropped with everyone in the room, because I looked around and a lot of people were sat there with their jaws hanging open, like, oh shit.
You not think they telegraphed out of it?
I don't think so.
I felt like it was pretty clear that something like that was going to happen. The second Thor meets, they went
to that planet and he didn't go alone. Do you know what I mean? It's not like he left Gamora tied up or anything. Or on the ship or wherever. You know, I know maybe he used a space gem, but I felt like that might have been coming, but the way it was delivered and the fact he drags her and it's deadly silence at that point. Do you know what I mean? You don't hear her screams. You don't hear those kind of moments.
And it wasn't subtle, was it? I mean, he didn't push her over the edge. He just launched her.
All I'm saying is
it just makes her look a little stupid considering it's her. Because
I think she was a bit naive, and I agree with that. I think there is an element where she maybe did underplay what he was capable of. She didn't think he was capable of caring, so that's why she dismissed it when she was up on the cliff edge. But she also didn't think it would lead to that, you know? But ultimately, she didn't want Nebula to suffer, so there was some moment. I think, talking of Gamora, I think the scene on the Milano, which was pretty tough to watch, and also earlier on Nowhere, where, I know that's what it led to, but where she asked Quill to kill her, essentially, yeah, if it came to that. That did then lead to one of the funniest parts with Drax
and his invisibility.
It's like, how long have you been stood there? An hour. I just thought that was absolutely hilarious.
I was gonna say, like that whole sequence even before that, when they meet Thor and then they're still kind of half flirting.
We're coming back to that, man. One of my favorite parts of the film, and it was in the first kind of
like
15
a pirate
minutes.
Had a baby with an angel. And even last night, even the 10th time he calls Rocket Rabbit, I was still chuckling, going, "He Rabbit."
Sweet. We got onto Thanos. We were talking. I think we will come back to that sequence with Thor quite shortly, and the Guardians, which was one of the best parts of the film. The bits with Ebony Maw, and there's some good Tony lines in here. So we said he was quite intimidating, and we see him in that flashback with Gamora when we're on Gamora's home planet, and he's, you know, basically ordering the Death Squad. And he is quite intimidating. He says, "Hear me and rejoice. You are about to die at the hands of the children of Thanos," which is called, again, Children of Thanos, I thought was interesting. It tells you immediately who they are, in a sense.
Which is weird, because he'd used that phrase before, hadn't he? On the plane, on the Asgardian ship, he said, "You are all now children of Thanos."
Yeah. "Be thankful that your meaningless lives are now contributing to," and then Tony stops him. "I'm sorry, Earth is closed today. You better pack it up and get out of here. Stonekeeper, does this chattering animal speak to you?" "Certainly not. I speak for myself." And then Tony says, "It means get lost, Squidward," which I just saw.
Which is great, because that means SpongeBob SquarePants is canon in the MCU.
It's just such a hilarious, man. It's such a line. I mean, we had a bit before that with Wong, and they were talking about their favourite ice cream flavours, which I thought was brilliant as well.
Hulka burning fudge.
Yeah, I just thought it was
so
great.
I would buy that.
Yeah, I would buy that too. And I just thought it was really good, those interactions early. And then we had, obviously, Doctor Strange was taken. It's all about getting that Mind Stone. He has that very simple spell over it, but it basically stops him. Not the Mind Stone, the Time Stone, obviously. But then Spider-Man gets the Iron Spider suit, and I thought, Marco, you could just
genuine around.
Try and contain yourself. Did it live up to your hopes and expectations and dreams?
It exceeded them the first time when the arms popped out.
Not you. This is Marco's turn, man. He's the Spider-Man boy. Come on. Let him
talk. It's fine. I understand. But I'm pretty much going to say the same thing as Stu. When the arms come out just sort of unexpectedly, that's sort of the kicker. But even initially when you just sort of see the sleek design and stuff, it's very cool, because like that's obviously an Easter egg that we kind of half thought was going to pop into Civil War.
Yeah, Lego.
Then we saw it at the end of Homecoming, and he still didn't wear it. But like, I think the nice thing is just everything. I mean, I'm jumping a little bit, but everything biased, obviously, everything Spider-Man, Tony, and Doctor Strange related in this film, I like comfortably my favorite parts. Just so cool. And that
I thought they were great. I love anything pop culture reference, and I love the fact that he says that really old film when he's talking about aliens.
Yeah,
and kids Tony just gives him a look. Yeah, exactly.
You're not allowed to make any more pop culture references.
It's just great. It's just great because he's just
an excited little kid, isn't he?
How has he nailed that role so well? I mean, we went back and watched Homecoming. I've watched it a few times now. I just, every time I watch it, I think, Christ, he so wanted that part, but he delivers it so exceptionally well and almost downplays it. And people just think, oh, he's just some young, you know, plays it as a young teenager. But it takes a lot of skill to play that role. And he plays it just perfectly, to be honest. And we'll skip ahead, but his emotion, which was quite incredibly, because we're skipping all over anyway, it's this kind of podcast, but his emotion when he dies, seemingly dies, but his emotion is almost, it feels real because it was unscripted and it was improvised and he did it.
Oh, was it?
Yes, it was, which is fascinating for me because
I think he did it
and they just thought this works because he had a longer death than anyone else in that moment and he made it count. I mean, there is,
which makes sense because of his spider sense.
James Gunn, the crew also had a word when he went, oh, which was dad.
Me and Tom were pretty much holding each other last night when Groot was dying. It was really, it was like a proper support group.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. But that relationship, that father and son relationship between Tony and Peter has developed really well, you know, in a short space of time. I think they really convey the emotion. And I love the moment when he says, you're an Avenger, and he gives him the whole kind of arm on both shoulders like he's knighting him, you know.
And he has that big shit-eating grin and then quickly has to go stern face again. He's like, no, we're on a mission.
Yeah, he plays it so well.
Can I just quickly say that I think what's really cool about that interaction as well is you see enough of it in this film that it gives that death a lot of gravitas. That's going to be one of my criticisms later. Maybe unfairly so, but I think
Bad News Lopez.
I'm gonna be that guy. I'm gonna say like certain things that could have worked at the end a lot better needed stuff like that. And I think the reason you feel that death a lot more is because you're like you can sort of almost have a blueprint of what's sort of running in Tony's mind and the guilt that he's going to start feeling from that whole dynamic. So I think it works really well. So kudos to them for doing that.
The other relationships and some other key ones in this. So Guardians meet Thor quite early. We get that great moment where the Guardians are skipping through space and playing another really cool soul song. And they're all really relaxed and comfortable and singing Drax's Fast Asleep. Groot is playing on his classic arcade game and they tell him to turn it off and he basically tells them to piss off and they say language because they all understand what he's saying and I just absolutely adore that.
That was James Gunn has done an explainer now. They've all got like a universal translator so everyone can understand him.
Yeah, I love the fact that Thor learned Grootish or whatever it would be at school as well.
An elective. I mean,
elective. I just thought it was hilarious.
This is my friend Tree. I am Groot. I am Steve Rogers.
You've stolen basically the best line of the film there, but it's one of. It's just the way that Cap delivers that I am
so
Steve
solemnly
Rogers
like,
with such innocence
Rogers.
Though, man. It's just his classic innocent Steve Rogers. You know, it's when he talks about the internet being so helpful. It's that classic Steve Rogers moment.
Yeah.
Not Captain America, it's the Steve Rogers moment.
Definitely, you know? I was just going to say that it is, because Captain America is confident and sure of himself. Steve Rogers is just the bumbling little nerd who kept trying to get into the army.
Yeah, he's a guy that never quit. But the opening with the Guardians and they drag him onto the ship and Gamora is basically feeling him up.
And Drax
basically says that Chris Pratt is one sandwich away from fat.
No, that's
or is
Rocket.
That what Rocket says? Oh,
no. You're one sandwich away from fat.
Yeah, he's like, no, you're not, he's not a dude, he's a man, you're a dude.
I love that. It's just hilarious.
And then basically Thor starts basically stealing all their food, expresses that Rocket is the captain clearly and not anybody else, and asks if he wants to go on his adventure to Nidavellir to forge a weapon that only he could handle because they're all too puny, basically, which I thought was really funny.
Even though that makes Rocket want to get one even more.
Yeah. I think one of the most poignant scenes is when they do go off on the escape pod and Rocket is trying to be that man and step up to the role of being emotional support, which I find hilarious. And ask
that's
Thor
such
what's
an important
happened.
Scene.
It is that an is, important scene.
It's really, but the reason I'm saying that, right? Because if you look at there's a couple of characters who are sort of an antithesis of Thanos, and Thor is one of them. Cap is the other, because Thor, you kind of like there's this whole element of like at the end where Thanos is like, oh, you know, what was the price of this? What did it cost, etc. And then you look at like how much Thor has lost, and the irony is like it's Thor's failure at the end of the film, I think, is just as important as like people moaning at Peter Quill, because he doesn't go for the head because he wants Thanos to see his face.
He wants him to suffer.
He wants to see, like, you see, I got revenge. I won. I beat you. And the problem is, that's the difference between Thanos and Thor, is that Thanos would have gone for the head. Thanos would have been, like, resolute. And that's the weird antithesis around, you know, the differentiation of these two characters, I thought.
Yeah. It's also a good film for showing how much Thor's matured as well, because when he finds out that Gamora is Thanos' child, you obviously it sets the tension. You think he's going to flip the table, grab her by the throat and pin her to the wall, and he uses it as a bonding experience. And again, it's showing out how much he's improved since the first Thor film, when he was just so impulsive that he goes and starts a war just for the sake of it.
Yeah, I mean there's some brilliant interactions. I think the other one, when they're discussing this is Thanos we're talking about, he's the toughest there is. Well, he's never fought me. And Rocket says, yeah, he has. Well, he's never fought me twice.
Twice, yeah.
Which I just thought is genius. Because Thor plays that innocent card a lot of the time. Yeah. Not bordering stupid, but do you know what I mean? There's an element of that.
First Avengers film with the he's adopted line.
It was one of them where I
like to think that was maybe ad-libbed, or there was some input from him, because it's so lightning fast when he does it that it just strikes me as this new Hemsworth.
You can feel that James Gunn and Taika Waititi kind of influence a little bit.
You can feel the James Gunn. I was going to say exactly that.
When it says to space, you know, it flashes to space, and I just think that's classic kind of James Gunn line. And then you see the Guardians and the Milano, and you just... It's so clever, this film, because it is a collaboration between so many people. I mean, I think we'll go on to talk about that a little bit later on maybe part two of this, because this is going to run and run. But it is a very collaborative process. There's a lot of people involved, and you do get a sense that this film has been made because of a lot of care and attention from a lot of people, not just one director with complete free reign, or an executive producer, or someone above them on the chairman's level. It's a real project and a labor of love, because it has been forged over time and developed over time. And they're not just going to leave people out and go, well, the Russos have got this. The Russos are collaborative. You know, they're not just one entity. They both have different mindsets, and they both bring different elements to the film, as they've done in the past. So.
Well, Coogler and Gunn both get credits at the end, don't they?
Well, Coogler clearly is involved in Wakanda, because he is the Wakandan, you know, his style of interplay between the characters, Okoye and Black Panther particularly, is his style, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? The
and
way
like
they
you
speak.
Said, all the space stuff. I think everything that takes place in space has had James Gunn sat in the corner going, well... Because it basically, those bits feel just like a Guardians film, don't they? The bits
on
Earth feel like the Russo. It feels like you've got the Earth bits are like Winter Soldier, Civil War. The space bits is Guardians. And then again, the Wakandan stuff is all Coogler. And they've just put the three of them together, and somehow they've just gelled. I mean, they are three completely different styles of making and showing and representing visually and through.
I'm glad even got Harry Tyker in there, because it wouldn't have worked, but you know.
Yeah, Tyker is a bit weird for this, but
yeah.
I'm sure he was consulted.
So I was going to say, even New York has also got that like very subtle Scott Derrickson feel when you first sort of interact with the Sanctum, and there's a fight in the street. So it's not... It wouldn't look out of place, like, you know, the Ancient One having a fight with Cassidius in that particular.
No, I felt like this is a heavy Doctor Strange feeling and in terms of style, because we've always talked about these films that they are all superhero based films, obviously, and they're all comic book based, but they are all quite distinct in feel. And we always talk about Winter Soldier being espionage and all that kind of stuff. And The Guardians is like a classic kind of Spielberg adventure film almost in space. You know, it's got that kind of Star Wars, but quirky feel. And then Ragnarok was something completely left field. And Black Panther, Coogler says, was his kind of Bond. I know it's slightly different to that, but you can see that whole Shuri being Q and those kind of tech and that kind of feel to it. Do you know what I mean? And I get it. I you know, they're all different styles of films thrown together.
Can I just do a little segue about Ryan Coogler? Did you know that when they signed him for Black Panther, they only signed him for one film?
That's changed.
So having just made a film that's made Marvel $1.3 billion, he's now sat around the negotiating table going, so how much am I going to get paid for Black Panther 2 and 3 then? Negotiating power.
Yeah, I think it's the same with Wonder Woman, isn't it? Patty Jenkins
had even more so, because I mean, we knew Wonder Woman was going to be good. We knew Black Panther was going to be good, but nobody said $1.3 billion for Black Panther. Nobody in their right mind thought it was going to do that much. Even Coogler must have been going, what? We've got how much money? And now he's negotiating his contract. There was something you mentioned before that I forgot to say.
Go on.
It's Marvel aren't doing a Hall H presentation this year at Comic-Con.
No,
because like you said, they're not even announcing the name at least until the last quarter of this year, potentially, because they don't want to distract away from, first of all, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and then they want to sort of put some of the focus into Captain Marvel as well. So I think they're actually playing it very sensibly, because if they go to Comic-Con, the first thing people are going to want to know is, right, well, what's it called? Can we get some teaser footage? Can we get somebody on stage in a costume?
At some stage, but I mean, they won't be brave enough to do a non-trailer film.
No one would ever do
that. It doesn't suit marketing in terms of modern
media. It's not the Disney way, is it?
It's not the Disney way, but I'm very intrigued with what they do about it. I'm extremely intrigued, because it could be so different to what we're used to. And a lot of people were saying, oh, you know, Spider-Man 2 is going to shoot in this. It's like, yes, but they can't cease everything. Do you know what I mean? They can't hide anything from social media as it is today, because we've seen scenes that are shot for the next film. We've seen this because people are everywhere. They're shooting in major cities. They're shooting in, you know, very visible locations. Everybody's got a camera phone. So you can't escape the world of it, but it doesn't make the emotion of that scene any less. Do you know what I mean?
It doesn't.
When you go back and watch pivotal films from your generation, if they still hit you hard enough, it doesn't matter that you've seen them a dozen, two dozen times before.
Think about Jurassic Park.
It doesn't take away anything from it.
We both love Jurassic Park, and that was, what was it, 93, 94?
It's 25 years old, I think.
Yeah, and I've seen that film probably at least 20 times. Still gets me. It's still as tense as anything the first time you see the T-Rex's eye.
That kitchen scene when I was, you know, 8 or 9 or whenever I watched that, and I was like, that scene will stay with me forever, because it was so scary at the time, and you don't forget that. It's the same with like Terminator 2. I watched that with my dad when I was quite young, and I was probably too young, but I don't forget a couple of scenes in that movie with the, I can't remember the actor, but the evil robot in that film, and when he's stabbing through the eyes with his rage kind of hand. It's like, Jesus Christ, that never forgets you. You know, you can't get away from it. And the emotion of films doesn't leave you just because you know what's coming next almost. You know, that's a few of the criticisms have been thrown at this, but you can't do that. They can't not stop production. It's Marvel, and they've done so well to not announce everything. Do you know what I mean? Because
I was going to say, what they have started doing seemingly, like you can see they've announced the slate. There's three Marvel films every year coming until like 2022. Yeah. But now we're in a very unusual position. We actually don't know past Guardians 3 what these films are.
Which is interesting. They're being very coy. The only films that we know are coming out now, we've got Captain Marvel, the next Avengers film, and Spider-Man 2. And Ant-Man and the Wasp. They are the only confirmed films. There's lots of talks about. I mean, we know we're getting a Black Panther.
Sure, there'll be a Doctor Strange sequel. There'll be a Black Panther sequel.
We know Black Panther 2's happening. We know we're going to be getting. It looks like we're getting another Thor film, but I like the fact they're keeping it close to the chest because obviously there's the Fox buyout now. They don't want to come out and go,
it's going
to
change everything.
This is the next
well.
5 years of films, and then all of a sudden the deal gets ratified, you know, next summer, and then they go, well, shit, now we've got the X-Men, now we've got the Fantastic Four.
Now we're doing
Four.
6 a year, yeah.
So I think they're being very, very clever because Marvel have always told us, haven't they, what we're getting for like the next 5 years. We don't know shit other than about the next 18 months, and that is that's not an accident. If Disney can do one thing, they can market the shit out of the future, and they're not doing for a reason. And I like it.
Exactly.
Because that gets me excited, because that gets me thinking. I think it was Kevin Feige said, they've got storyboarded or they've got like penciled in the next 10 years of films. But obviously that was before the Fox buyout deal. And you've got to think that underneath these penciled in ones, they've got like, well, yeah, but we could put the Fantastic Four into here. Or do we want to bring Wolverine in? Or villains as well? You know, well, now we've got access to such and such. Now we've got Doctor Doom. Maybe Doctor Doom is going to be the next Avengers villain, something like that. And I think they're playing
that'd be awesome.
Wouldn't it just?
Yeah, it does open to a lot of other things, but that buyout has still not happened and it's taking a lot longer than anticipated.
It's going to take about 18 months in total to get it done because it's got to go in front of Congress and Senate to make sure. I mean, it does give a monopoly.
It's an extremely complicated deal, more complex than when Disney bought Pixar or Star Wars, LucasArts and stuff. It's crazy, really. This is already running, so I think we are going to be good and do this into two parts. We've got a lot more of the film to discuss. We've got a lot more to cover in terms of going forward. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about comics in the next one because, you know, the Gauntlet comic and Thanos Quest, and there's some quite heavy involvement there, but they've taken a quite different direction, as we talked about earlier as well. So,
which has been forced on them.
Do join us again, to discuss this in further detail. We're going to be back with part two and our guests shortly.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about...
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.